continuing pastimes on the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, describing the activities of Shaktivesh, King Prithu. Of course, the four Kumaras have arrived in the assembly of Prithu Maharaj, much to his surprise, and he addressed them at that time. My dear great sages, Chatush Kumara, mystic yogis have difficulty seeing you. What I did, I don't know, to attain your mercy of your presence. If one pleases Brahmanas and Vaishnavas like yourselves, he can achieve anything now and after death, and automatically achieves the favor of Sri Krishna. Oh, Chatush Kumara, please tell me how people entrapped in the samsara, absorbed in sense gratification, how can they attain blessedness in their life? You are the only friends of those suffering in samsara agni. So please, how can they achieve their goal? Smiling with satisfaction, Sunat Kumara, of the four Kumaras, said, "The question is good, King Prithu, for you're inquiring about the benefit of all living entities. You know everything yourself, but you're asking questions because this is the nature of saintly persons, to ask questions of advanced devotees. Shastric conclusion is that you and society should become detached from bodily enjoyment and increase your attachment for God, who is transcendental. One can become attached to God by performing bhakti yoga, shravanam kirtana vishnu smaranam. One should arrange his life so every moment he's hearing Krishna kirti. And this way, he can give up his taste for material sense gratification." The four Kumaras are very much emphasizing Shravanadasha Yoga. Shravanadasha Yoga. That method of connecting with God by continually hearing about Him. His name, His fame, Nam Kirti, Rup Kirti, Guna Kirti, and Leela Kirti. All the glories of His name, qualities, forms and pastimes. This is the only medicine, the only panacea to get free from our inordinate and excessive attachment to enjoying the body, the world, and all the illusions that it provides. Sunat Kumara goes on to explain the activities of the person who's becoming attached to God and the behavior of someone who's trying to serve the Lord. He should live simply, follow the four Rigata principles, and avoid blaspheme of others. He should not associate with those attached to money and sense gratification, as these are the sources of mental agitation, which cover and annihilate the consciousness. Nothing blocks one's self-interest than in thinking of material subjects. When one has no spiritual wisdom, he ends up taking birth as a tree or a stone. Prithu, O Priyaraj, try to understand Krishna in the hearts of everyone, for he is living there along with the individual Atma, and it is through Krishna in the heart, the Paramatma, that everyone should surrender. King Prithu replied, "O Sunat Kumara, Lord Vishnu foretold that you would visit me, and now I have been blessed by your visit. It is the duty of a king to offer a sage something. So what will I offer you? I'll offer you everything I have in my possession. My life, family, palace, and kingdom and treasury, everything I have, I give to you. I understand that all my opulence is simply given to me by the mercy of the Brahmanas, and they're the real proprietors. Great personalities like yourself cannot be properly paid for their words of enlightenment. Please be satisfied by your own transcendental activities. Satisfied with Prithu's reception, the four Kumaras happily left. Maharaj Prithu continued to rule his kingdom only for the pleasure of Krishna. With his wife Archie, he begot five sons. King Prithu had wonderful qualities. He was as powerful as the king of heaven, Indra, but yet he was tolerant like the earth. Prithu distributed mercy to everyone equally as a great philanthropist. At the same time, he was working for self-realization. He was fixed in his purpose, like the Himalayan mountains. He was a stockpile of wonderful, valuable metals and jewels. As the wind passes everywhere, the influence of King Prithu was felt everywhere. In terms of physical beauty, he was more beautiful than Cupid. He was more thoughtful than the lion. In terms of self-control, King Prithu was like the Lord himself. All over the universe, people were glorifying King Prithu's name and fame. His character rivaled the character of Lord Ramachandra. In his old age, King Prithu divided his wealth and gave pensions to all kinds of living entities. And then he gave the rule of his kingdom to his sons, or rather the rule of the whole earth. Very interesting comparison between ancient leaders and modern leaders. Modern leaders, they try to take as much wealth as they can from the people, basically rip them off in a royal fashion. And when they know they're about to be dethroned or overtaken, then they pack everything in a big fat airplane and they fly off to Switzerland to some other country to live with all their stolen goods and stolen wealth. But this king is thinking, now I'm retiring. And so like a rich man makes a will and he leaves his money to his children and wife and family, divides his assets fairly among everyone in his immediate family. But the king was thinking, all the residents, all the people of the earth are my family members. So whatever wealth they have, I should divide it and provide for everyone. He gave pensions to all kinds of living entities. So in those days, I believe it was Satyuga, I'm not sure. But during King Prithu's rule, people didn't require LIC, life insurance, and stocks and bonds and all kinds of investments so they could live securely and happily in their old age. They simply depended on God and Naradeva. God and Naradeva means Kamadeva, Bhagavan, Adidev, Sri Krishna, and Naradev, the king, the emperor, was the proper representative of God. As God is the father of all living entities, and the father treats his children always fairly and lovingly and equally. So God is the Supreme Father, always treats all of his living entities fairly, equally, and lovingly. And the king is representative, Naradeva, as a god among men. The king is representing the Lord's interests, and therefore he's treating all his citizens just like a father treats his children, fairly, equally, and lovingly. Very wonderful example. Of course, it's all ancient history now. Now we're surrounded by thieves in the name of leaders, rogues and thieves, elected by other rogues and thieves. King Prithu decided to leave his palace and go to the forest for self-realization and perform the austerities of Vanaprastha. He took his dutiful queen with him, and the citizens were so attached to him and so much in love with him that they cried when he left the kingdom, as someone would cry when someone dies. While living in the forest in Vanaprastha life with his dedicated, chaste wife, Atri, Prithu lived very austerely, inconceivable austerities of existing on brikshamul, the roots of trees, fall and sukapata, dry leaves and fruit. Sometimes they would observe a week, 2 week, 3 week fast where they would only drink water. Finally, he became so austere that he was only breathing. He's a prana master of the art of living on prana. He decided to perform the most intense austerities. Why did he perform so many intense austerities? Simply to purify himself from all the sins of being a wealthy person. Wealthy persons collect so many sins, consciously and unconsciously, because they engage in so many business pursuits and investments, and invariably those investments involve animal killing of some sort, or violence, or to other living entities, or to insects, or humans, or cows, or animals. Somewhere along the line, there's violence incurred. What to speak of their own sinful activities that they engage in day to day in the pursuit of royal pleasures or wealthy aristocratic enjoyments. And therefore they have to pay. So he was doing all these intense austerities, knowing that, although he's a religious and pious king, that he had to purify his existence. It wasn't simply give a donation to the temple, wasn't enough to do it. Such an intense austerities. So he picked one hot summer day in Jace, and he built fires on four sides of him, and he sat, it's called Panchagni Brat, Panchagni Tapa, Chardig Agni and Upar Agni. So he did this Panchagni Brat, Panchagni Tapa. First of all, he's not drinking any water, so there's no moisture inside his body except whatever he's getting from the pranayama. So in other words, intensity. It's not enough that the four Kumaras visited you and gave darshan. It's not enough that Lord Vishnu came to your yagya and had darshan, sakshat darshan, Vishnu sakshat darshan, sakshat kar. But still more is required. And then the rainy season, he would expose himself to the rain, sit in the rain. In the winter, he entered the river and stood up to his neck. Obviously, this is Satya Yoga. And we die if we don't eat in 24 hours. And that's also told in Puran. The greatest austerity in Kali Yuga is to give up food. Forget about water. Just don't eat food for 24 hours. That's like doing all these things that they did. All these things that Prithu Maharaj did in Satya Yuga basically get the same benefit on Harivasara or Ekadasi Vrata if you pass the whole day, 24 hours a day, hearing and chanting about Krishna and not eating any food but drinking water. One day Vrata like that, you get more spiritual credit and put Sukriti than you do on all this intense austerities. But who can even do that? Maybe we're forced to sleep at night and nap throughout the day. As soon as there's no food in the body, we become dead. Living, walking, dead. Dead chanting, dead hearing, dead listening. The descriptions in the Harivasara Ekadasi Vrata say one should step all night joyfully hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And these shastras were written at the dawn of Kali Yuga 5,000 years ago. All these Puranas were collected. And these Puranas are telling how to observe the Kartik Vrata or Ekadasi Vrata. Specifically Ekadasi Vrata, of course Kartik also, but it says that in the assembly of devotees one should pass the whole night in proximity of Tulsi and Thakurji and joyfully chanting and dancing, glorifying the Lord. Most people, even if they attempt to do such a juggling, it's all they can do is keep their eyes open. Can't even move their bodies. They just lean against a wall somewhere and watch their watch. Watch them. Minutes go by and you think, my God, this is the longest day of my whole life. It's 24 hours, 10 hours, and not even 24 hours. We group off here and there, this and that. We meet at 9 p.m. and we only have to go until 6 a.m. It's like 9 hours, and it seems like 9,000 years. So he was doing intense austerities. At night he would lie down on the floor, no mat, no bedding. He's a perfect celibate. And he did everything he could. Of course, it was Satya Yuga, as I mentioned. So what was he doing? He was practicing Ashtanga Yoga, it's called. The mystic yoga system. It's Karma Mishra Bhakti. It's yoga mixed with bhakti. And in this way, he developed intense attachment and love for Krishna. Mainly because he was constantly thinking of the Lord. And by doing all these austerities and denials, it gave him the power of concentration and the strength of determination and purity of mind and heart to actually fix his mind. Savayamana Krishna Padaravindayar. This is the real purpose of all yoga, is to Saratam Smarta Saratam Vishnu, to always remember Krishna. Ate Narayana Smriti. Especially if we prepare, we remember Krishna moment to moment, day to day, so we can recollect his name and form and qualities and attributes at the time of death. If we don't practice Smaranam, Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam throughout our life, it will be impossible to remember Krishna at the time of death. And Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita when he's talking in the death chapter, the Marana Adhyaya. In chapter 8 in Bhagavad Gita, he's talking about Smaran Bhava. Everywhere this is told, Smaran, what you remember. It's all about memory. Of course, if you live a pure life, your memory and mind will be preserved and functioning properly and favorably at the time of death. But if one lives an unrestricted life of sense gratification, absorbed in tamasic and passionate activities, he will suffer from dementia and mental derangement. So he won't be able to remember the Lord. It'll be impossible to fix his mind on the Lord. His mind will only have the capacity to think of the pain, extensive and extreme pain that's raging through his body, the death fire and the whole pain of being ripped out of the body is too much for him to think of anything but the body, because his mind is so weak, no mental power, because of non-practice of remembering Krishna. So there's a series of verses in the death chapter, Antakale Chamam Eva Smaran Muktva Kalevaram Yaprayati Sadmat Bhavam Yati Nastyatra Samshayam Smaran Muktva Kalevaram Antakale Chamam Eva. Antakale, that means time's out, time's over, game's over, pack up, empty the stadium, let's get in your cars, go home, game's over. Antakale, you're out, your time is up, the hourglass, there's no more sand dropping through your hourglass. You're dead, you're dying, the end of life. Whoever at the end of life quits his body, mukti means to give up, kalevara means shut your deha, gives up his body. Smaran? Mam smaran. Very easy. Same as Hindi. Remembering me. Whoever at the end of his life, if he gives up his body, he dies remembering me, what happens to him? He once attains my nature. Yaprayati sadmad bhava. Bhava means he comes to the Bhava Dham, Mahabhav Dham. He comes to Braja Dham if he's remembering Radha Krishna Yuga and Govardhana and Vrindavan, Goloka. He attains my nature, which means he's transcendental, because Krishna is transcendental. Na Samshaya, don't have any doubts. There shouldn't be any doubts about that. That's 8.5 and 8.6. He's repeating the same thing. So 3. He's saying, this is the end. He's two verses about the end and one verse about the midpoint. So verse 8.5 and 8.6 are about the end. When it's all over, nothing. You're not moving now. You're just lying and dying, waiting to transit this body and accept a new one, or to go to the transcendental Chit-Dham, spiritual realm. 8.6 Yam Yam Papi Smaran Bhavam Tyajit Yante Kalevaram Tam Tam Ivaiti Konteya Sadatad Bhava Bhavitam. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, again, Smaran Bhav. Yam Yam Vapi Smaran Bhav. Smaranam, Smaranam Bhavanam. Smaran Bhavam. That Bhav. Most people live their whole lives based in calm Bhav. Calm, lust, desire, enjoyment. Just fulfilling one desire after the other. Okay, I fulfilled this. Oh, another one said, oh, now I need this. Oh, I have to have that. I must get this. I must get that. All these new desires are flooding our minds like rivers entering the ocean. Constant flow, never-ending stream of mundane, materialistic desires. I get one thing. Oh, I don't like this. I want another one. I want a new one. I want a better one. I want a faster one. I want a bigger one. No one's ever satisfied. Briefly satisfied, then soon dissatisfied. This is the nature of material objects and material relationships. Brief satisfaction and ultimate dissatisfaction. Now we have a 21-inch television. Then everybody's getting big televisions. Oh, this one was so good. Now it's so bad. It was the biggest television in the block. Now it's old-fashioned. It works fine. But my mind is not happy with this TV. So it's not the TV's fault, it's my fault. I have to get 6-foot diagonal screen. I have 6-foot diagonal screen. But then everybody's getting full, whole wall screen. 10 by 20 feet. I said, oh, this is not good. 6-foot. We have to get this. And then hard work, prayas, for no result. Always a life of dissatisfaction. There's no inner peace. There's no connection with the source of satisfaction, who is God. Whatever state of being one remembers, when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. So Arjuna is listening to these two verses, saying, Ante Smaran, Ante Smaran, Ante Narayana Smriti, which is a Shrutis, another place, the Shrutis, Ante Narayan Smriti. So Arjuna's hearing this is, okay, remember, remember, remember. So then naturally, as often people do when they're listening to a lecture, they say, well, how do you do that? Okay, you told me that at the end of life, two verses you've just told me here on the battlefield, because maybe the end of my life is coming also. Of course, you're here, so I shouldn't perish. But if you want to assemble on a battlefield with enemies, with clubs and arrows and mantras, all prepared to kill you, there's a chance that a lot of people will die in a battlefield of Kurukshetra, and of course millions did. But this world itself is nothing but a battlefield of Kurukshetra. It's a war against Maya. So at any moment we can also be annihilated. Death is everywhere, hovering above everyone, waiting to take them to the next position. But in foolishness, people are covered. Avaranatika, Shaktiyavaya, covers everyone, so they forget about that guy that's sitting over the shoulder, left shoulder, the Grim Reaper, the agent of death, the lord of annihilation, the lord of death. Is much on one shoulder as the lord of life is on the other shoulder, inducing us to enjoy, enjoy. So Arjuna thinks, all right, you told us at the end of life we should remember Krishna, but that seems difficult. Everywhere there's so much pain, there's danger, fear, just that. Anxiety, tension, suffering, intense suffering. Death is not a fun thing. Birth, it doesn't look like too much fun. If you ever see someone born, they don't look like they're laughing, having a great time. The mother's suffering, the baby's suffering. It's quite a... If you've ever seen movies or witnessed, kids don't come out laughing and smiling. I've never seen a smiling baby at the time of birth. Nor have I ever heard anyone laughing or crying. Ah! It's horrible. Face, you take a picture of that face at the time of birth crying. Pain. and suffering. They say, see, here's you before you learned how to make a fake smile. This is the real you. And it came out of the womb before you were conditioned and learned how to smile. We want to take your picture now and give a fake smile. Hello, huh? How are you? It's all fake. It's all drama, show. Maya show. Arjun said, so how is it possible? It seems impossible. You're saying, okay, remember me, Smaran Bhavan, Yam Yam Vapi Smaran Bhavan, and then you'll come to me, but how can I do that? How is it actually possible to remember God at the time of death? And Krishna says in 8:7, you can do it by practicing now at the time of life. Practice at the time of life, for the time of death, there won't be any more death. If we don't practice for the time of death during the time of life, we'll see so many lifetimes and so many death times. They say, oh, my lifetime is so many years. Well, what about your death time? What's your lifetime? Lifespan. What's your death span? So Krishna says in 8:7, Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu, Sarvakal, all the time. Mam Anusmara Yudhya Cha Ayarpita Mano Budhir Mame Vaishyas Yasamshaya. Arjun, therefore, listen, what is the answer to your question you're asking in your mind, which I can anticipate? Therefore, how to do that? Remember me at the time of death, Ante Kalichamamiva. Then you should always think of me in the form of Krishna. At the same time, carry out whatever your duty is. You're a fighter, you're a Kshatriya, so you fight. That's your prescribed dharmic activity, Varnashram Dharma. With your activities dedicated, my Arpito Manobudhir. Your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without a doubt, a samshaya. By fully absorbing his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, Prithu became free from his false identity with the material body. Eventually he had Sakshatkar Darshan of the Paramatma. And at this state he was receiving instructions directly from the Lord of the Heart. Then he finally gave up Ashtanga Yoga and fixed his mind in bhakti, full pure bhakti on the Lord's lotus feet. I'm yours, I'm yours, I'm yours. He was waiting for death to come. He sat down in a particular yoga posture and he raised his life air up from the heart to the navel, from the navel to the heart to the throat, and to the Agya Chakra between the eyebrows, and then through the Brahmarandra. It's called the Crown Chakra, Shira Chakra, something. So then he did this whole yoga system, mixing all the elements here and there. And he went back to Vaikuntha. Queen Archie, his loyal, dedicated, chaste wife, was a naturally delicate woman, but she lived a very rigorous and life of denial in the forest, also eating just fruits and leaves. But she was deriving so much pleasure from serving her husband, she didn't feel the slightest difficulty from all this austerity. She lamented at the passing of her husband. Without wasting any time, she burned her husband's body. She took a bath to purify herself, performed all the rituals, circumambulated the burning body of her husband, and she entered the fire on the same funeral pyre with him. There's no problem, it doesn't boil over. After observing this act of great courage, all the demigods and their wives showered flowers upon the funeral pyre to honor the noble Queen Archie, who had humbly followed her husband, and also the great King Prithu. In fact, they were so impressed that they were glorifying her. All glories to the Prithu's Patni, who always spent her life serving her husband and serving Lord Vishnu. And she's also rising to the higher spiritual realm, following her husband. Anyone who has become a human being but wastes his time in material activities is actually cheating himself and envious of his own self. That's what the demigods are saying. So all the demigods' wives are talking like this, and then Archie reached the same Vaikuntha planet where their husband had gone. Maitreya Muni concludes this narration by saying anyone who hears it or reads it or describes the characteristics of Prithu with great faith and determination, he will also go to Vaikuntha. So again, it's emphasizing Shravanam and Kirtanam attains one, gives one perfection. And there's so many material benefits one will get if he's desirous also. Have many children, if he's a father. And become very wealthy if he's poor. If you want to be famous in society, then you should hear this narration of Prithu's Mahima 3 times consecutively. And if you do so, if you're foolish, you'll become a great scholar. So it's so auspicious to hear about Prithu Maharaj Ki that it will drive away all kinds of ill fortune. So even a transcendentally situated devotee should also speak about Prithu and allow others to hear about Prithu. And it finally says if someone reads this great history of Prithu repeatedly, then he'll increase his shraddha and his Vrati, his attachment and attraction for Krishna's feet. And by being totally absorbed and attached to remembering the feet of Vishnu and Krishna, one will easily go back home, back to Godhead. King Prithu Maharaj Ki Jai.